And it's time once again for a visit from the New York Times ethicist Randy Cohen. Randy stops by our New York studios every 2 weeks to pass on a few pearls of wisdom. Nice to have you with us again, Randy.
Hi, Lynn. Nice to be here.
Let's bring a listener in now, Jean, and that is not her real name. Jean is a college professor who's hoping for tenure. She writes, I know my supervisor is both anti-Semitic and homophobic, and so I take great pains to not reveal that he has hired a Jewish lesbian. If he knew, I feel certain I would be harassed, and given the budget crisis in my state, I could lose my job without his support. But lying is wrong, and I have gone to great lengths to deceive, including not correcting his assumptions about my life. Am I still violating good ethics if I allow someone to believe a lie in order to keep my job? Randy, what do you think?
Well, I'm still trying to get my head around the idea of intellectual life without gays and Jews. You know, now my head hurts. You know, is that a paradox? Is that an oxymoron? I mean, we know that Yale would have to close down tomorrow, wouldn't they? Or at least that's what my friends who went there say. Jean has absolutely no obligation to reveal intimate details about her religious beliefs or her sexual preferences. You know, in fact, anti-discrimination laws in most jurisdictions forbids an employer from making those factors in hiring or promoting someone. So her boss is wildly out of line in even raising the matter. And I'd go a little bit further, too, that protecting her privacy is not lying. But even if it were, I think you could make a case for it here. That while lying is always unfortunate, sometimes it really is justified. If a gun-toting thief says, got any money, you can say, no, that's it, you've stolen it all. There would be nothing dishonorable there. And if her boss is, in effect, saying, if you're a Jewish lesbian, I'm going to fire you, then I think the lie is completely justified. It's as if he were pointing a kind of economic gun at her head.
All right, well, let's see if we can get Jean on the line now to see what she thinks of your advice, Randy. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
You heard what Randy just had to say in reaction to your question. What was your take on that?
Well, I felt relieved because while I feel dishonest letting my boss believe I'm someone I'm not, I really need to keep my job.
It sounds like you feel kind of guilty about that.
I feel terrible about it because I don't feel ashamed about who I am, but on the other hand, I don't think I can change his opinions, and I don't know what to do about that.
It's a terrible thing. It's just soul-crushing to have to lead a life that you feel is inauthentic or to have to wake up and feel that you're being deceitful to other people, even jerks. You don't want to deceive even jerks. But sometimes you're under such dire pressure, either a physical threat or an economic threat, that it's very, very difficult to come out. It's an admirable thing always when someone can face up to that. But I don't feel any of us can ask another person to take that kind of risk when their job is at jeopardy.
Do you feel a little less guilty now, Jean?
I do. I feel a lot better. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bye.
Gee, Lynn, I usually have to tell people they're being dreadful, that it's a pleasure to tell someone with, I think, an overdeveloped sense of integrity that they're doing fine, that it's she is not the wicked. I wish her boss would call.
And what would you tell him? What would you tell her?
Well, first we tell him what the law says about discrimination, and then I think we'd have to rough him up pretty good, wouldn't we? That why shouldn't this woman be judged on her merits, as all of us wish to be judged?
Well, you would have to rough him up.
Well,
pretty
I don't
good.
Want to be judged on my merits, actually.
Now, Randy, in the past we've talked about how you make your decisions, and some of your methods are awfully labor-intensive, chewing through utilitarianism and transparency and the precepts of John Dewey. Couldn't you just pick somebody you admire and see what that person did or would do?
It's a very good method. It's called the heroic model, and I believe it's one that many people use to good effect. The way it works is, when you're in a quandary, you ask yourself, what would Lincoln do? You know, and it needn't be Lincoln. You can pick your own hero. Probably not Martha Stewart, but, you know, someone you admire. Now, it works very, very well, but there are limitations. One unfortunate thing about this system is that Lincoln is never around when you need him, and that lacking his profound moral understanding, it's really tough to know what he would do in your perplexing circumstances.
If you did use that model, what hero would you turn to, do you think?
You know, I think the heroic model I've got in my head is my mother.
Huh.
And maybe we all do. You know, in a way, it's saying that many of us have internalized the values of our families and try to live the values with which we were raised. And that's not such a bad thing either, although there are times when I hear her voice that you know, I wish she'd just, you know, mail me a note, maybe.
Is your mother still alive?
Yes, she is.
So you can, in fact, pick up the phone and call her and say...
Oh, I do. Yes.
So now we know who the true ethicist is.
Oh, I hope there's never been any question about that. She's by far the more honorable of the two.
Randy Cohen will happily tackle your questions. Drop us a line at watc@npr.org and be sure to include the word ethics in the subject line. You might get to pose your question to the ethicist himself. Randy, thanks so much for being with us today.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Lynn.